The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Tough tariff talks tank markets. Employment reports fall short of expectations. Facebook is back in the hot seat. And we're taking a look at market sentiment, all this, and much more on episode number 555 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And welcome. This is Andrew Horowitz, the host of the Disciplined Investor, co-host of DH Unplugged. Each and every Tuesday, we talk with John C. Dvorak at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Live stream it, have chat available as well. But this week, here we are. It is now the second week of April 2018. And we're seeing quite the volatility in markets. It was a tough week for markets where we saw very choppy sessions that led pretty much to a pretty ugly downstroke at the end. Friday was pretty ugly, which ended the week on a down note in the red for the week. That was pretty significant in that markets were trying to hold up pretty well. We did see, again, a very choppy week. Dow Jones Industrial Average ended up down for the year now 3%. S&P is down 2.5%. The NASDAQ is slightly higher for the year. Bitcoin is down 55%. And the VIX is up 95%. That kind of tells a bit of a story of what's happening here. But what are you thinking? Is it simply a short-term phenomena? Well, what it tells me is that risk assets are clearly being sold. And we're still watching a battle between the fundamentals and the technicals. We've talked about this a couple of times over the last shows. But I think what's important to remember here is that when we think about fundamentals, when we're looking at the various ratios of stocks, we're looking at the earnings capability, earnings growth, revenues, margin expansion or contraction, looking at ROE, ROI, ROA, we're looking at, you know, the amount of debt that a company has. Oftentimes, that's really, if you think about it for a second, because we only get that information on a quarterly basis, it's more of a rear view look at what's going on. We're looking at the past. We're looking at what's happened, not what's going to happen necessarily, because we don't have a good grasp. Yeah, we do have some insight from the company as per their various, you know, when they put out their earnings reports and they have a management call and they come out with their expectations and their guidance, we have some information about what they believe is going to happen over the next 3 months and sometimes over the next 12 months. But a lot changes during those periods. You have things like interest rates that rise. You may have higher costs and inflation on some of the products they use. You may have a change in what's happening in terms of a new product that comes out that competes with theirs. There's a lot of things that happen that could really throw off those fundamentals. So when you're looking at fundamentals, we have to realize that oftentimes it's a rear view approach to it. Now, technicals, which is the use of pricing data, volume, to look at what's happening right now, is often, it's considered more of a coincident indicator because you see what's happening right now. Of course, looking left on a chart, you see what happens. So that's the historical rear view approach to what's gone on. But price action today is much more relevant when looking at the potential for what's happening with the markets, because markets are said to be, and I believe, are a forward-looking mechanism. Therefore, even if we sit here and bang the desk and say, all right, okay, the fundamentals are sound, which we do believe, we think that earnings growth will continue to be in the double-digit range over the next quarter or so. Okay, that's good. We say, well, the economics are good. We see that all the different reports that are coming in are pretty solid overall. Okay, that's good. The problem is that there's a lot of things that are changing very quickly right now. And we have to rely, I think, more on the technicals, where the levels are from the perspective of the important support levels, because we're in a, you know, we've turned, we're kind of moving towards a shorter term downtrend. There's no question about that. Anybody that wants to argue that, give me a call, because it's clear that on the short term basis, we've definitely rolled over. Now, depending on how long you want to look back, if you want to look back 5 years, you could still be in a bit of an uptrend, even though we're starting to break down a bit here. We looked back 10 years. Clearly, that's also a downtrend that we're seeing right now in the bigger picture of a long-term bull market uptrend. However, if you want to look at the last 6 months or the year to date, that's a different story, isn't it? Things are changing, and you have to be aware of this. One of the things that we're seeing in terms of the argument, the disagreement, the battle, is that the fundamentals on one side are telling us one thing, and those people who believe in just only fundamentals, well, that they're going to continue to try to bid things up because they believe that, well, things are looking pretty rosy. But again, on the technical side, something else is changing, telling us that we should be more cautious. The technicals are telling us that there's something lurking about that may cause some of the fundamentals to come into question, some of the beliefs that we have in what's actually going on. And what is one of the main ones? It has to be this idea of a potential for a trade war. Now, there's been a lot of talk over the last week, a lot of talk, too much talk, way too much talk, by the way, of this tariff nonsense. Tariffs that have been put on and talked about, I just do not see anything good that will come out of this. In fact, each quarter, we write a piece for Horowitz and Company clients. You've probably seen these before, the economic commentary and review. We talk about and discuss in these the what I see is the most important items that we see for markets and investors in the near term. 3 months, 6 months out, something like that. And when we look at this, we try to put down on paper what we think is going to be the things that will be really be the focus. And right now we put that together. And oftentimes what we do is we put this out for clients immediately. They get we send it to them. And then we have a waiting period, maybe a few weeks or a month. And we put that out for listeners. But this time I think there's some important issues, two main ones that we looked at. This is not complicated. This is not anything more than what seems apparent right now and really what's going on. We dig down into what's going on and what the potential outcomes can be, not necessarily having any impact on what's going on, but more so a reality check of what we need to do as investors and what we need to do for our client portfolios, you know, right now, the near term into the midterm. Because like I said, there are some changes that we're seeing. The dynamics and texture of the market has changed. So what I want you to know is, with that in mind, that if you go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, into the show notes of this episode 555, you'll find that there is a place halfway. And right in the show notes, there will be a way for you to download the most recent, the one we just created, economic commentary, where we talked about two specific topics that I think are really important. And I wanted you to get a copy so that you could read it, because it was, I think, that much of an impactful item that you need to look at to make sure that you are seeing what is going on with the backdrop of what we're seeing. So go to the show notes for this episode and grab a copy. And read it. Don't just download it. Read it. So, as for these trade wars, last week, as I mentioned, there was so much talk. We started out in the beginning of the week, or actually the end of the week before, with this realization that, well, we have the idea that there's going to be some tariffs that will be put on directed at China. And there was intellectual property issues that were being looked into. And somehow this number of about $50 billion came out that were the targeted areas that we were going to put approximately, 20-25% tariff on the goods that we get from China to try to level the playing field was the discussion. And markets looked at this as, okay, at first, this is really bad. Then the realization came out that we're still in the stage of looking into this, not actually putting this into law or legislation or by decree, if you will. And then China comes out with a very small response, about $3 billion in goods that they were also looking at putting on as tariffs in a retaliatory measure against the U.S. And then quickly, somehow that moved up to an equal amount, $50 billion. Markets freaked out with that China was going to now go dollar for dollar. President Trump said it's not going to be tit for tat, but it is becoming tit for tat. Larry Kudlow comes out trying to walk back some of this. And he's in an interview on TV, comes out with a discussion about probably there may be some, but maybe not, and really trying to downplay this whole idea of tariffs, that a free market economy on a global scale is really beneficial and cooler heads will prevail here and there's not going to be all this tariffs. Don't worry about it. Markets staged a massive reversal. Went from down hundreds, 500 points to up a few hundred. It's like a 750-point round trip on the Dow Jones Industrial Average to close on the highs after Larry Kudlow pacified markets and investors thought, well, maybe it isn't going to be so bad. So things were looking a little bit better that, okay, we're back into the camp of everybody's talking, a lot of blustering, a lot of feathers being kind of waved around and the potential for this to be more of a negotiation rather than anything more. Trade wars, well, probably not. It's going to be resolved rather quickly. Both sides are going to come together and just resolve this. And then out of nowhere, President Trump does what poker players call a push, an all-in tactic, trying to scare your opponent, trying to put them off, showing that you have a very strong hand and you're willing to bet it all. He says that they want to see an additional $100 billion worth of tariffs looked into to put against China on all sorts of measures. Now that China came back with their response that they were going to have $50 billion worth of tariffs put against us, because that's what we said. Well, President Trump says, all right, I see your 50 and I push you I raise you another $100 billion worth. Now, China, of course, said in response that, well, whatever number you come out with, we are going to protect and defend our economy against this. Therefore, tit for tat. Tit for tat. So now all of a sudden markets are like, oh, man, this is not good. Not good. Already seeing soybean farmers freaking out. We're seeing massive sales of soybeans from areas that didn't sell going to Europe. There was one of the biggest sales of a block of soybeans that went above the futures price, above the price to Europe from an area on the East Coast and the Northwest that usually sends it over to Asia. Their sales dropped off. So what we're seeing is that the impact of just talking in these levels, just coming up with this discussion, is really starting to impact the sales of various items. And this is going to be, as I see it, or have the effect of a very inflationary situation that is going to be a big quandary for the Fed. Because tariffs are inflationary. If you put tariffs on and enough of them, it becomes very inflationary because prices rise to keep up with the tariff that's being put on for the domestic. So if you have, let's say, a 25% tariff that's going to be put on For goods that are going to be brought in, what happens is that the domestic companies will boost their prices up to offset and say, hey, we could raise them up to, let's say, 15%. Because you're going to have to pay 25% extra for those goods that are brought in. And that's where you usually were buying it from. Well, we could pump our prices up a bit and you'll still buy them from us on a domestic basis because where else are you going to get them from? Very inflationary. As a matter of fact, really problematic from an inflationary and a price standpoint. And I really don't understand why the administration is not seeing this or paying attention to this or believing this or even considering this. So what we're seeing is that even though there is some enthusiasm over the start of earnings season next week, we're seeing massive outflows of funds from the U.S. equities. Some really big numbers being recorded over the last several weeks in sales of U.S. equities, equity funds, ETFs, stocks, etc. And what that tells us, I guess, is that investors want to wait until the storm is over. Or maybe there's a clearing. Maybe they can see a little clearer what's happening before they get too deep into positions, because what's happened is that as we are getting closer and closer to something here where on one hand we're hearing from the U.S. that, China is going to be negotiating. They're coming to the table. Already we're seeing that they are willing to do this or that. China's coming back and saying, we have no negotiations going on at all. I don't know what they're talking about. So whether this is a challenge to China, a trial balloon to see how things will go, whether it is a poker player's bet that they can outdo the other guy by trying to bet above their range, I don't know what exactly is happening, but in the middle, you and I are caught as consumers and investors. And we're going to get the short end of the stick no matter what happens here. Because if nothing else, the rise in prices that you'll see from a lot of goods and a lot of commodities are not just going to dissipate overnight, even if nothing happens. We're already going to see those prices rise. That's how it works. We saw that with steel. We saw that with aluminum immediately when those tariffs were put into place. So now it's kind of hard to invest and invest with confidence with the headline risk being as high as it is. Now, on a technical basis, you're seeing this play out pretty well because already if there is a kink in the fundamental argument, well, the technicals are taking over and we're seeing, once again, the S&P 500 bouncing off its 200-day moving average. The NASDAQ and the Dow Jones Industrial are between their 100 and 200-day moving average, kind of in no man's land. But there is some support if you look at the chart. And the specific charts that we look at has an added feature where we add the volume at price. We add a line and a level that shows us where investors really have been investing with a lot of confidence and putting their money to work with volume. And there, when those levels are drawn and they're very significant over a long period of time, we could look at those much better than moving averages, by the way, to understand what's happening, kind of get an x-ray of what's happening with the markets. And we use this to much more accurately find where these levels are. So when I look at this in terms of the NASDAQ and the Dow Jones Industrial Average in particular, I noticed that when we go back a few months and we look at the daily chart that they pretty much respected these levels. So they are bouncing or holding on those levels. Again, this is where investors have previously really put some money to work, and we can calculate how much money and look at that as a level of importance, you know, where people put their money where their mouth is. Still, this is a very difficult area for stocks right now because, you know, you can look at just the ranges of what we've seen. You can look at the VIX. The VIX closed at 21.5 on Friday. So what they're saying that investors believe that the 30-day volatility will be very high compared to what we've seen and actually compared to history. Whereas last year, in 2017, we had a period that was probably one of the most calm and constrained and a time when we saw the levels and the daily movement of the markets just absolutely a green light for investors, because we saw the VIX at the 9-10 level on a regular basis. There was no volatility, nothing to be concerned about. But the 30-day volatility of what we're seeing now that is expressed through the VIX is telling investors that you got to be careful here, because you may get these dramatic swings in markets and you can be blown out of positions as these swings happen. If you're going to enter a position, you're going to say, okay, I'm going to buy XYZ stock at $30 and I'm going to put a 10% or a 12% stop on the downside. You could all of a sudden wake up the next day after putting on this position and be stopped out very quickly. You could also have something else happen to you. You put on this position and you think it's a good position, and you know, I'm not having a stop. I like this position for the long term. You buy it at 30, heads down to 29, 28, 20, 25, and now you start second guessing yourself. You know what I'm talking about. You start thinking, wow, did I do this wrong? Where's it going? Now it goes down to 24. You're like, all right, 23, I'm done with this. Whereas if you waited a little while, maybe you would have picked up some at 23, because the fear is overwhelming. You know, that emotion that goes into investing of losing money becomes very difficult. And when you see markets that have exaggerated ranges and stocks that are moving around as much as they're moving around, it becomes very difficult for someone who is initiating positions to hold on to those if you're not believing that you're going to hold this at all costs forever. And we talked about this too in the latest commentary. Just a reminder, if you didn't do it already, go over to The Disciplined Investor, this episode 555, and download that, please, and read it. But this is something, this is a problem, because it makes it very difficult for you as an investor, not a long-term player owner of a stock, but as an investor. And there's two different sides to this, right? If you're an owner of the stock, you're probably going to end up buying more as it's moving down, living with whatever happens, no matter what happens, until it becomes a breaking point that you just can't take it anymore. And then that's usually the time you should have probably been investing. So that's, again, why some of the people are reducing positions ahead of their thought that if things get worse, I'm going to get crushed here and I don't want to add more to what I have right now. And that's why markets are moving like they're moving. Not to mention all the headlines. Way too many headlines, by the way. Somebody turn the headlines off for a little while, because you're seeing the algos, the computers grab onto this, the investors getting freaked out about it, and it all becomes a really difficult time to hold a high level of confidence. Sentiment starts to roll over, and that becomes a self-fulfilling situation. It becomes a feedback loop where you're going to see that as the greater volatility prevails and changes, where, by the way, many investors that have only been investing for the last, let's say, 5 years haven't seen consistent volatility. Little bouts here and there, little movement, you know, 5%, 8%, but nothing more, and not more than maybe a month or two. Then they believe everything just calms down. Most professional advisors have never seen a significant and prolonged downturn. Many of the pros that are giving you advice these days that have been doing this less than 10 years have no idea what a real market correction looks like. I'm not talking about a quickie. You know, the down and then the big, the V or the U shape up again. I'm talking about a prolonged level of underperformance from stocks, whereas there is a significant amount of risk that people just don't know how to handle. I'm kind of curious how this is going to play out with all those bullish advisors that continually talk about how, okay, there's no downturn happening. You know, they try to convince you, there's no downturn happening here. There's a downturn. What do you think is going on? And they believe that nothing can break the bull. But I'm going to here to tell you something right now. So much time is talked about the Fed and how the Fed has helped and how tax have helped and how the reduction in regulation has helped. And the idea that you don't want to really fight that, okay? But the Fed is, in fact, on a rate hiking position right now. That is what they're talking about. Last week, Powell said, everything looks like we're going to continue on just on Friday. We're going to continue on. Maybe it was Thursday or Friday. We're going to continue on with this. We don't see any reason why we should slow down on our current plans, because they realize also that these tariffs, at least the tariff talks, are inflationary. And the amount of people working is going to be helping to expand the economy, or at least the wages. And even if markets come into a little bit of trouble here right now, the fact is that the economy, and you look at housing and construction and all of that, is doing pretty well. So they are going to stick with their numbers and their plan until something majorly tells them otherwise. Now, could it be the markets? Yeah, they watch the markets. There's no question about that. A little bit too much for my taste, but they watch it. And they watch the economics, which is a great segue, because let's talk about what's going on. Let's talk about first what happened last week and what we saw and what to expect next week. So from an economic standpoint, what do we see? So on Monday of last week, we saw the ISM index come out. This is the ISM manufacturing index for March. Pretty important number for the markets. It came in at 59.3. Expectations were about 60. And last period was 60.8. So a little bit of a drop down in that number, but nothing significant to a point where you're really starting to worry about things. You know, maybe it's just, and I think a lot of it had to do with some of the weather. We did, in fact, see three major storms hit the northeast part of the country. So I think that was something that was, we're looking at that. We could possibly, you know, I always joke around about the weather, but I do believe there was some weather-related one-offs that we're dealing with that month. In terms of the auto sales, we saw that, again, in terms of auto sales, non-truck, a little bit of a drop, 4.1 million on an annualized basis for March. Truck sales were up pretty significantly, 9.6 million versus 9.08 million on the prior. And then on Wednesday, we saw the ADP employment change, which everybody was all excited about because, wow, we saw 241,000 new jobs added to the private payrolls. Expectations were for about 203. Last month was 246. And remember something, when we saw last month's number that was 246, we saw 326,000 new jobs added to the payrolls on the official non-farm payrolls number. So there was a lot of anticipation. There's a good spirits about that. So factory orders at the 58.8 level, down from 59.5. ISM services came out, and that was 58.8 from 59.5. That's the more important one because our economy is much more based on services. On Thursday, some initial claims came out. We saw that 242,000 people were added to the claims, again, supporting the idea that there was some impact on these numbers from the recent storms. Then Friday, we saw the unemployment numbers come out. Non-farm payrolls came out at 103,000. Expectations, again, were for about 175,000. So that was a big miss. The unemployment rate was 4.1, which was steady. Expectations, though, were for about 4%. Average hourly earnings were up 0.3%, so that was a bit more than expected. The prior was up 0.1, and the consensus was for a 0.2 increase. The average hourly average work week was the same. Consumer credit was interesting because we've been seeing a reduction in consumer credit. People are not going out and adding new credit recently, and I'm not sure what that's about. You know, you have consumer confidence pretty high. You have more people getting jobs. But for whatever reason, consumer credit has come down significantly. Maybe people are just cleaning up their credit finally. Like, you know what? We don't want these high rates anymore. We're not borrowing as much anymore on a consumer basis. Not mortgages, but on a credit basis. So possibly that there's something going on there. But I would say that even though these non-farm payroll numbers were pretty disappointing overall, I just really do think there was a lot of weather that was involved here. Until I see next month's and the month after, we see a trend developing in this direction, I'm going to hold off on really being too worried about the employment numbers. I think you have to. Even though some people who are bearish, like, oh, look at that. Yeah, that's what I was talking about. We knew it. We knew these numbers were going to come down. I still think it's a one-off. We're not seeing that as the situation that we've seen month after month previously. So just let's see what happens. Now, next week, we're getting back to inflation numbers again. So we're back to finally where PPI is coming out before CPI. There was some holidays that came into play here, but PPI, the producer price index, will be coming out on Tuesday, nothing on Monday. On Tuesday, we're going to see this. The expectation is for a 0.2% rise on a month-over-month basis, which equates to a 2.4% overall year-over-year number if we just kind of project it out. And then on Wednesday, we see that the CPI will come out. Expectations for that to drop a bit down to 0.1%, which I will find a little bit hard to believe. I think we'll probably come in a little hotter than that. We'll see the FOMC minutes from the last meeting on the 21st of March at 2 o'clock on Tuesday. Now, we've seen time and time again that anything related to the Fed has been pretty positive for the market. So just let's keep a watch on that on Wednesday. If the FOMC markets ahead of those, we do see that there is a significant amount of uptick in there. Now, the one caveat with this is that Fed Chief Powell last week again said that they believe, that he believes, that we're going to continue on with the rate hikes that we have been talking about. Well, that being the case, I don't see how we may see a very dovish tone to the minutes. Keep that in mind. So if we do see a pop prior to it, realize that that pop may be dissipated when the minutes actually come out, because I just can't see that he's going to come out ahead of the minutes and say something different from what's actually in the minutes. On Thursday, we have import-export prices. We have export prices, ex-agricultural coming out. We have initial claims, and then Michigan sentiment on Friday. Expectations are for that to drop ever so slightly to 100 from 100.1. Now, also the important thing to note is that earnings season is starting next week. We have the beginnings of the main players coming out with their earnings. So what are we going to expect? Let's kind of skip right to a couple of things. On Wednesday, we have Fastenal, which is going to be coming out. But Bed Bath & Beyond, give us a little bit of peek into that. This company has been on a downturn for some time. A year ago, they made $1.84 per share. They're expected to make $1.41. But on Thursday and Friday is the big numbers that we're looking at, and more so Friday. On Thursday, we have Delta Airlines coming out. We have BlackRock coming out, so we'll see what's going on in the investment and financial area. BlackRock is expected to earn $6.41 on about $3.3 billion worth of revenue, up from $5 a share a year ago. Pretty good. Delta Airlines is expected to be a little bit lighter than last year, but on Friday, we have Citigroup coming out. Expectations are $1.60 versus $1.35 last year on $18 billion of revenue. JP Morgan is going to be also coming out with their numbers, $2.28 versus $1.65 on $27 billion. PNC Bank, $2.43 versus $1.96 a year ago on $4 billion of revenue, and Wells Fargo at $1.07 versus $1 on $21 billion of revenue. Interesting, when you look at that, JP Morgan and Wells, JP Morgan coming out with $27 billion of revenue expectation and Wells Fargo at $21 billion. JP Morgan making $2.28 versus their $1.65. So we're talking about 55 cents or so, or close to that, of an increase per share, where Wells Fargo is only a 7 cent increase per share, owing to the troubles that Wells Fargo has. I think that's, I don't think anybody disagrees with that. The things that have gone on with Wells Fargo over the last several years, and things that are being uncovered about the unsavory business practices they have, the beating up of the consumers and clients and people that they are doing business for, is quite unconscionable. And they're getting their hands slapped, not allowed to grow anymore. And obviously it shows up in their expectations for what they'll be earnings, what they'll be earning and what the revenue will be. But that constraint that the Fed put on, when Janet Yellen put that on, the kibosh on their growing is very problematic. Now, moving past this, I received a good amount of questions from listeners recently. I would say over the past six or seven weeks on the idea and concept of hedging. And they went from the question of, well, do I hedge? Do I not hedge? How do I hedge? Should I sell? Should I buy? What do I do? So, as you know, if you don't know, first of all, you can ask me any questions you want. You go over to the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and simply you can click the Ask Andrew button on the top there. Anything that's on your mind, this is the way you bring it to me. The best way, it's easy. It'll come right to my system. We can make sure that you get either an answer directly or I will put it on the show in the future. But a lot of these questions, I won't answer directly. You know, if you ask me, should I buy shares? I'm not going to tell you that because, first of all, we reserve that for clients. Second of all, I don't know your situation entirely. And unless I do, how can I give you an answer? That's not fair to you. But I did receive these questions and I started thinking about this. And I thought maybe I could give a little insight into some ideas and what you could do, some concepts. Because again, these are very difficult times for a lot of people. When we're seeing that an index drops from high to low 10%, a lot of stocks are dropping 20 or 30%. And that's not fun. So if you're going to have a hedge with your portfolio, the first thing you probably need to ask yourself or look into is, what is the makeup of your portfolio? In other words, are you heavy in one sector or one name? Is it broad-based and diversified? What does your portfolio look like and what are you trying to hedge? So if the idea is, I don't want to lose money. Well, okay. If you don't want to lose money, you shouldn't be invested. But if you really step back from that for a second, take a deep breath and think about what you're really saying is, hey, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, okay? I don't want to lose money, but I want to make money. Well, that's every investor's dream. And how can I accomplish this? So there's no absolute way to do this because hedging is not an absolute science. But you need to get back to what your goals are with your portfolio, what your risk is. Are you long or you're a short-term investor? And if you're a long-term investor, what are you hedging for? And what is the desired outcome here? And you also need to look at how you will react if markets move against you with your hedges. And that could be if markets move up or down, depending on how you're hedging, what you're hedging, what you're doing, and what you're, you know, how you're attacking this. So right now, markets are swinging wildly. We know that, with a bias to the downside. So if you use a hedge, a traditional hedge, you're looking to, I think, stabilize the portfolio against extraneous shocks. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know who's going to walk back comments about tariffs or if there's going to be further hit jobs on companies like Amazon or if we're going to see a tremendous change in earnings potential for a specific sector or if there's going to be a change of, let's say, management of one stock. So again, we got to look at, all right, are we trying to hedge a position? Are we trying to hedge a sector? Are we trying to hedge the concept of just not losing money in a portfolio? So you can hedge in a direct way against a single position. Probably that's probably the easiest way to hedge because there are certain things that you could do aside from simply just getting out of the position or setting a stop. But you definitely can hedge a portfolio to a degree, but realize, I want to state this very emphatically. I just do not think that you can make an absolute perfect hedge when you're investing. It's either going to be too far to the short side or too far to the long side of your portfolio when you finish setting up all these hedges or any of the hedges. And in order to hedge, the other question is, what are you hedging against? It's not simply just a market drop, right? But why is the market dropping? Is it a short-term situation because we're seeing all these headlines that are going on and there's a lot of confusion? Or is it a bigger earnings concern or economic concern or maybe a health scare or a war? Or, I mean, what is it that we are looking at that we're trying to protect from? Some things markets will either not care about or recover very quickly from. Other things are much more difficult to recover from. So again, you can hedge or defend positions by broad-based put options or indexes, or perhaps invest in inverse ETFs for short periods of time. And the position-based hedging you deal with, maybe selling some calls and trying to bring some money in against it. But again, you know, you only a certain amount of money you could bring in. You could buy some puts on a position. You could work on some broad-based. So for example, let's say that you have, let's look at Amazon. Good example. Let's look at Amazon and let's say that you want to hedge against Amazon, but you don't want to directly buy a put or you don't want to sell a call against it. Well, you could theoretically buy an inverse ETF with the Qs, the NASDAQ 100, which the Amazon takes up about, I think it's close to an 8 or 9% position in that index. However, realize that the direct hedge that you have there is only 9% Amazon. The rest is the NASDAQ, the rest of the stocks that are in this index. However, if Amazon comes down and much of the damage is done to the tech sector, you're probably going to see a pretty big move inside of the index. But again, the indices will move 10%. A stock will move 20% oftentimes a particular stock. Not always, but what I'm saying is stocks will move a lot more than an index because it's much more broad-based. But when you want to look at defending now a broader base, and this is different than an all-out bet on a specific security or market, again, you could do this with a general put on an index. You could possibly buy the VIX option calls. You can utilize inverse ETFs on either a sector or a broad base. You can short the Wilshire 5000 index through an ETF. But again, it's not a perfect portfolio hedge unless you're very concentrated. And when we're swinging against the moves on a daily basis like we're seeing now, it's very difficult to hold a hedge because just everything's going wildly one direction or another. So what we're doing is we're swinging against the rhythm of the market. So we have a core position in our portfolios for our TDI managed growth strategy where we do most of our hedging work. Our global allocations are set. We've actually done some things in there to reduce risk significantly so we don't get hit in the face with any major losses if markets do start to do what they're doing now. Same thing with Investology. We have a very diversified approach and we are a bit lighter on equities already because of what we saw coming at the end of the year last year, towards the end of the year last year and into this year. So we have some alternative investments in there. We have a lot more bonds in there, short term. We have just a lot of things that we set up in advance. But when we're talking about a portfolio that has a core position of equities, which we are 58% equities, down a bit from where our top level is in the TDI managed growth strategy. And what we do there is lately is that we're swinging with the markets, but in an inverse relationship. So let me just say it differently. We're swinging against the rhythm of the markets right now. We're buying the dips that happen in a very major way, looking to buy and then sell if a recovery happens, or if we're stopped out and then sit on the sidelines, wait to see what happens and possibly buy again if it goes lower, or we're selling the rips short with the same principles that we just talked about. Now, this doesn't work every time, but the way the market has been moving back and forth so dramatically, not only on a daily, but on an intraday basis, we look to find where those levels of support are and pick up a position on a broad base ETF or a leveraged ETF for a short-term trade, maybe hold it overnight or look to close it at the end of the day for some profit and then see what happens next. Now, a lot of the market's movements, of course, do happen overnight in the futures. But what we've seen is when futures drop dramatically, buyers seem to appear out of nowhere the next day in the morning during regular market hours. And the same is true when markets are up so dramatically that sellers seem to come in and take it down a bit. So again, swinging with the rhythm against the rhythm. Because it looks like there's so many conflicting narratives out there right now that, you know, it's very hard for the markets to gain any kind of stability. And who is this coming from? It's from the government. It's the 600-pound gorilla out there. And they're closely watching markets. And that brings in a a really significant amount of risk, because if they're trying to walk back things and then say things and then walk back things, ranges can be dramatic because markets do look at what the government says. Now, after a while, maybe it will be the boy that cried wolf in all this and nobody's going to believe anything out of the government. But right now, they still do, or at least the algos do, or somebody does. So what I want you to do is look at hedges right now as short-term positioning and only to protect if you're a long-term investor, right? So to protect some of those positions. With wild swings that we're seeing right now, that you need to really look at technical levels as areas of entry and stops or as profit potential. So hedging is a very difficult process right now because, again, if you're looking to hold on to things, while you have to be quick, because we're seeing some of these things move pretty significantly. But with the higher prices of volatility built into many options, the opportunity, if you have positions and large positions that you're holding, to maybe sell some calls against, and then if they come down, if markets come down, profit on those and do those a few times, makes a good amount of sense. And we do that with clients that have concentrated positions. So for example, if you bring a concentrated position over to us that you're trying to unwind, one of the things we'll look at is the opportunity to use options as a way to offset maybe some of the volatility, or to profit a bit as we're trying to move out of that position. And if you have a big amount of taxes with a low tax cost basis on that position, some of the things that we try to do is use this technique, which is pretty reasonable thing to do, to sell a call with a much higher price out into the future and potentially look to profit on the volatility swings and the potential for maybe stocks not going anywhere for a little while, a little up, a little down, a little up, a little down, or a lot up, a lot down, back and forth, but still at a price level that's much higher, and therefore collect all the premium on that option. So there's a way to do this, but that's pretty much one of the techniques we use to unwind a position. So if you have that, that's something you may want to consider. And if you don't know how to do it, well, send us an email and we'll talk to you about how to potentially look at this. Now, the final thing that we want to talk about today, we must talk about this whole gobbledygook mess that we're seeing with Facebook. Yet another story comes out over the weekend that shows that there are more apps that are collecting data from users. And more importantly, the information that has come out and the research that has come out has not been from Facebook. This was some reports done by CNBC that they found that there was another app that was doing a similar process of collecting information for a nonprofit group for study and research purposes, for psychological, blah, 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 that was taking the data and then selling it somewhere else or being used by another party. So in other words, Facebook didn't know about this, or they were unwilling to tell us that they knew about this. Now, Zuckerberg came out last week, the CEO and the founder, tried to smooth out over things and come up with all the reasons why they're going to be adding a massive amount of security professionals onto the platform, bringing all these employees to really focus on all this, shutting down the Cambridge Analytical deal, they're all this that they're doing, right? And then we saw a day or so later, Sheryl Sandberg come out talking about how things were going to be handled and they take privacy very seriously. Stock rallied a bit. That was good. However, now it appears that there's much more to the story and this data leak and this data gathering that's going on. That, again, either Facebook wasn't aware of or chose to hide. Neither is good. And nothing, in my opinion, can come good of this in the short term. Now, Zuckerberg said last week also that he didn't see any reduction in advertising revenue thus far. And he talked about this in teleconference last week. Then a day later, Sheryl Sandberg says that there were signs that some advertisers are stepping back a bit. And with all the privacy changes that Facebook is making and supposedly closing off some of the ways that advertisers and these apps can get to your data, and telling users how to actually shut this down, and some users being very concerned about this, and advertisers getting possibly worried and maybe having to reconsider their spend on Facebook, it appears that advertising revenue has got to take a hit. And if not that, users, and some of them being very concerned, you know, maybe slowing down their use of it, therefore less ads hit the streams. Some users are going to be more careful with the data. We know that. Some users don't care. They're either that or they're oblivious. And that can also put a damper on the ads that are making it through. Again, simply reducing the revenue for Facebook. So I just don't see this as a major opportunity for Facebook to have increasing revenues in the near term. Maybe they'll raise rates, maybe, but then won't advertisers step back too? So again, if you think about, just go down the list of what could happen here and try to make the case for me how Facebook is going to actually, over the next 6 months or a year or so, have increasing revenues from all this. Seems improbable. And you add this to the Amazon hit job that's going on, we really could have some more problems related to the tech, the sector in total. Amazon and Facebook are a big part of the NASDAQ cap weighted index, and you need to be aware this index could be up for sale. And there could be a lot more downside for this, especially after that massive run up that we saw over the last 2 years. And by the way, if you think that Facebook was the only company that was selling data and that was allowing for user information possibly to be, gathered and utilized then after that for advertising or political use or whatever it may be, I think you're being very naive. I think this is the tip of the iceberg with regard to all the data that's out there, how it's being used. And I think there's going to be a lot more being looked into by not only government, but we're seeing that already, but by people questioning, okay, wait a minute. I realize it's free and it's ad-based and I get that. But who else is doing this? Are the companies that I'm paying a fee to, whether it's Netflix or, I don't know, you know, maybe my LinkedIn account that I pay a premium for, are they also allowing for some of this data to be shared somehow? And, you know, what does this all mean? Because the advertisers want to get, again, Netflix is a little bit different, but the advertisers in some of these areas want to get as targeted as they can. And therefore, they're going to need all the information about you that they can. And companies are going to be hard-pressed to really get good targeting if they don't have the data anymore. Therefore, again, looking for other alternatives. So just keep that in mind, because I do see this as a major roadblock into the future with some of these models that are out there right now. And I think there's going to be a much bigger hoo-ha, if nothing more than the Congress and the government getting involved, as we've been seeing, and saying, hey, wait a second. There's some privacy concerns here in a big way. And what's coming out that we see that's on a regular basis of what they've actually been able to amass, I just don't think is a trivial matter. Some people do, but I just think there's a lot more that goes into this that may be some further downside for some of the biggest companies out there, like at Facebook, with regard to their revenue model and therefore their stock price. So keep that in mind. So go over to disciplinedinvestor.com, download the most recent commentary. Make sure to listen to DH Unplugged each and every week. Also on the right side, in the sidebar of the disciplinedinvestor.com, there is a link to the Benzinga FinTech Awards that I'll be in May of 2018. Use the code Horowitz as the code so you get your ticket. And make sure to listen each and every Tuesday to DH Unplugged. Follow me on Twitter. Andrew Horowitz is the Twitter handle there. And I will see you again next week. Thanks for joining me. Have a great and a profitable week.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.